Okay, it's a pleasure to be here. What I'll be talking is based on a paper that we're writing with a student of mine, Eileen. And the outline of this talk will be I first introduce the matrix model we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about its symmetries, its vacua, so it's a matrix quantum mechanics that has many vacua. We're going to describe how to count the BPS states and talk about some states with large quantum numbers. Then I'm going to describe the gravity solutions and some special limits, some plane wave limit that will be relevant for describing those type of states. And we're going to make some rough comparisons between the two sides. And why do we do this? Well, we like to have other examples of the gauge theory, string theory duality. And this example is closely connected to n equal to 4 Young-Mills. And so it's an interesting theory to study, and it has been studied for these reasons in the past also. So the matrix model we're going to talk about is matrix quantum mechanics. So it's basically the theory on many D0 brains plus some mass terms. So, so it's a massive theory. It has 9 scalar fields. So 9 n by n matrices, and plus 8 fermions, and these 9 8 by 8 matrices are separated into a group of 3 of them, and then another group of 6 of them, and there are SU2 or SO3 symmetries which act on the first 3, and then there is an SO6 symmetry that acts on the last 6. We can set the mass, so these are all massive fields, we can set their mass, let's say the mass of these guys to 1, and then the mass of these ones will be 2, and the mass of the fermions will be 3/2. This theory has 16 supersymmetries, so it's the same amount of supersymmetry as the supersymmetry of the D0 brain, but it's a different symmetry algebra. Actually, the symmetry algebra forms a supergroup. It's the so-called SU2/4 supergroup, and the U1 factor, so the U1 factor is really non-compact, and it's actually the energy operator of this matrix model. So this theory arises when we do, for example, this is a side comment, but this theory arises when we do the, consider an M theory in the maximally supersymmetric plane wave. But we will not use this fact very much. And here I've written just a schematic form of the Lagrangian. We have the usual kinetic terms and mass terms, the usual commutator terms. There is some cubic term. And, well, there are terms involving fermions. And, of course, we have one coupling constant that we can pull out of the Lagrangian. And if we set the masses to 1, then this coupling constant is essentially dimensionless. So that will govern the coupling in this theory. Okay. So there are a bunch of related theories that have this symmetry, and there are several related theories that can be obtained in the following way from n equal to 4 super Young-Mills. So we start with n equal to 4 super Young-Mills. So four-dimensional maximally supersymmetric gauge theory on S3 cross R. And on this S3, we have an SO4 symmetry group that acts as rotations of this S3. And then we can take n equal to 4 Young-Mills and truncate it to states that are invariant under some subgroup of this SU2 left. And depending on what subgroups we pick, we'll get different theories. So one thing we can do is we can restrict to states that are completely invariant under this SU2 left, and what we get is the plane by this matrix model we just discussed. I mean, what happens is that, for example, if we consider the scalar fields, the 6 scalar fields of n equal to 4 Young-Mills, the restriction that they should be SU2 left invariant leaves just the zeroth Kaluza-Klein mode, and so those were 6 of the scalar fields we had before, and then the other 3 scalar fields come from the gauge field here on S3, and the gauge field can be it's the sum of something that transforms in the 0, 1, and then in the 1, 0, so the one we are left on only with the one that transfers in 0, 1, and so that transfers as the dimension one, as the spin one representation of this SU2 right, and that SU2 right is the SU2 symmetry group that we had in the previous discussion. Okay, so that's how the scalars arise, and well, the fermions is a similar story. Okay, and then another closely related theory is you can truncate to states that are left invariant only by U1 in this SU2 left, and then you are left with a 2 plus 1 dimensional theory. So that reduces the dimension only by one unit. This is a theory that one could also consider. And then another simple case is when you take a quotient just by CK of this SU2 left, you're just simply considering Young males on this so-called length space. It's slightly different manifold. And all these theories will have the same symmetry group. So many of the properties that I'm going to discuss are going to be exactly the same, and in particular, the gravity description I'm going to discuss will be the same, will be closely related to all of them.
Is this 2 plus 1 dimension theory also finite?
Well, it's basically the same theory as it's closely related to the theory with Poincaré symmetry. So there is the theory on D2 brains when they are in flat space. So that same theory, you can put it on an S2, and if you add some mass terms, you preserve the 16 supersymmetry. So you preserve the same amount of supersymmetry, but the symmetry group is different. It's not the super Poincaré group, is this other supergroup. Let's go back to this matrix quantum mechanics. And so it is a massive theory, so it has well-defined vacua. And naively, one would think that at first sight that it will have only one vacuum, so when all the x's are zero. But actually, due to this the cubic term, well, in fact, there are more than one vacuum. And in fact, one can see that the potential can be written as the terms involved in the three scalar fields can be written in this form. And so the square of this gives the mass term, the square of this gives the commutator term we usually have, and then we have some cubic term that is similar to this Myers considered. And then when we set this to zero, we'll find zero energy supersymmetric solutions that preserve the 16 supercharges. And so we need to impose this equation, and this equation is the commutation relations of SU2. So the different vacua are different representations of SU2, and since these are n by n matrices, we need a dimension n representation of SU2. So this dimension n will be a sum of irreducible representations. So that we can have n1 copies of the dimension 1 representation, n2 copies of the dimension 2, and so on. So these are... that's a term we had in the original Lagrangian. It basically comes from the fact that... let's see. When you... It's the same as what Myers considered. So it basically comes, if you think about, but when you ask where it comes from, what do you mean? I mean, the M theory. Okay, yeah. So from the M theory point of
view. Yeah.
It's proportional. It's linear in the mass. So this term, so if you think about the M theory plane wave, it has a four form field strength. And when you reduce. So when you reduce that to string theory, to type 2A, you can use this term. So it's basically the same F4 that Myers considered when he considered this type of term. So there is this kind of theories have a large number of vacua, and how can we think about this vacua? Well, when we consider these dimension n representations, We can think of them as the D0 brains blowing up into fuzzy two spheres. So that's the Myers effect. So we have these D2 brains. But on the other hand, we can also think, well, this is not obvious from what I'm saying so far, but it turns out that we can also, if we take many copies of the dimension 1 representation, at first sight, one would think that one has many D0 brains on top of each other. But it turns out that vacuum can be best described in terms of a single NS2 brain, NS5 brain. So all the D0 brains blow up into a single NS5 brain. Now, this is analogous. So a situation like this was already encountered in when Polchinski and Strasser studied massive deformations of n equal to 4 Young Mills. So you take n equal to 4 Young Mills, you add some mass terms, and then that's a theory that has a superpotential which also admits solutions of this type. And so the whole structure is very similar. There are some minor differences. There are some differences, though, but at least classically, it's exactly the same story. And then they found that the vacuum that corresponds to just putting them all, taking just a trivial representation, corresponds to the system blowing up again into an S5 range. So in that case, we're wrapping an S2. In this case, they are wrapping an S5. So two simple vacua that we can consider is n copies of the dimension 1 representation that was an N1 5 brain, or one copy of the dimension n representation that's just one D2 brain. So these are two simple ones, but of course we can consider more complicated ones. The configuration doesn't carry a Nevers-Schwarz charge because it's wrapping an S5. Right, I'll discuss this a little more. It will be, so from what I said, this doesn't follow. But for a moment, let's say it's a conjecture, and we'll justify it more later. Now, this theory has many BPS states. So one can, so this is a supergroup, and it has a bunch of representations, and there are various kinds of representations. And they're basically, there are the long representations, which in this context they are sometimes called typical. Then there are short representations, and then there are very short representations. Here they are sometimes called doubly atypical or atypical. So these very short representations have the feature that if they are present, then they can't combine with anything else. They have to, when you increase the coupling or whatever, they have to remain there. On the other hand, the short representations could in principle combine into a long representation. So it could happen that at zero coupling you have lots of short representations, but when you increase the coupling, many of them combine and form long representations. Okay? Of course, in order for them to combine, you need to have at least more than one of these short representations. So typically two short representations will combine into a long one. Now, these super short representations are very similar to what we have in n equal to 4 Young Mills. So if we take two of the S of 6 scalars and we form this combination, and then we consider the state that has the form trace of C to the J, here I'm denoting by in the same way the field and its creation operator, then this will belong to these super short representations and should be BPS states that are there. Now this trace is really trace over each UNI factor, so when we decompose the D0 brains into a bunch of D2 brains will have trace. So we have the option of considering this trace just over any of these UNI factors. So we'll have lots of BPS states of this type. Now, a convenient way to give this information of which short representations combine and which super short and so on is to compute some index. So you compute a certain quantity which really contains the information about, well, which representations can combine or not. So if representations can combine, then they will not contribute to this index. And if they can't combine, then they will contribute. Then there will be a contribution to this quantity. And since it has the form of some partition function, it can be computed in a relatively easy way for different situations. So the way you... Yeah, so I'll describe. So here, Here, delta is just the energy. S is the spin under SU2. And then the GI are three commuting generators of SO6. So the rotations in the 1-2 plane, 3-4 plane, and 5-6 plane. The way you argue this is an index is just you pick one of the supercharges, which contains the first quantity here in the right-hand side, and then that's like a matrix quantum mechanics, so that's the usual argument that Witten made for matrix quantum mechanics. It applies for this case. And then here, these combinations are chosen in such a way that they commute with that particular supercharge, so you can certainly add them, and it will not alter the fact that this is an index. So as the usual arguments imply that it is independent of this mu, which is the thing conjugate to the supercharge that was appearing in the right-hand side, that is conjugate to the generator that is appearing in the right-hand side of the anti-commutator of those two supercharges we have picked. And as I said, that's as which short representations could combine. And in one particular limit, in the limit beta 3 equal to infinity, so there we pick up only this type of representations, and it just tells us the information about the super short. Now, in principle, we could write down a formula for, though it's not terribly explicit, but we can write it in terms of some matrix integrals, UN matrix integrals, and using the techniques that were developed by, well, were explained in a similar context by Mingwala, Haroni et al. But in the case that beta 3 goes to infinity, it's actually simpler. We can write down a relatively simple formula. And so this is the contribution to this index. And this is just saying the same information as what I said before, that we can have these states for each Ni. So for each of these fuzzy D2 brains, we have one set of operators like that. Now, what? Oh, P is just a convenient thing that, in order to write this formula, P is conjugate to N, so we are considering the index for various values of N. N is the rank of SUN. So if you wanted to find the contribution from each particular SUN, you would have to expand to pick out the particular power of P in the right-hand side. And Q is just some combination that survives here. But I show this as one example, but it can be computed in other cases. I'm just not showing you the formula. Okay, so now we will discuss some of these gravity solutions. And they are really a special case of the ones studied in a paper we wrote last year with Hailin and Oleg Lunin. And the reason they are the same is that this group, this supergroup that we're discussing, it's also the symmetry of 1/2 BPS in M-theory on ADS7 cross S4 or ADS4 cross S7, and that was the focus of this previous paper. And so it's really a particular case of what we discussed before. Now, in the regime we're interested in, it's better to think of this as type 2A solutions. So they will, just based on the symmetries of the theory, they contain, well, one time direction, so everything is independent of time. And then they have an S2 on which SU2 acts, or SO3. And then we have an S5 on which SO6 acts. And then multiplying these factors, we have arbitrary functions of the other two coordinates. And these other functions are all functions of a single function that we can call V of rho and eta. And that single function obeys a simple linear equation, so the Laplace equation, which turns out to be the Laplace equation in three dimensions with axial symmetry. Now, this third dimension in this problem doesn't imply anything for the geometry. It's not the geometrical direction in this problem. So in the actual physical problem, we have just the radial direction and the c direction, but not the angle. Okay, but when we solve the math problem, we have these three directions. Now, something important here is that we need some special boundary conditions for this Laplace equation. And the boundary conditions will come from studying what happens when the S2 shrinks or the S5 shrinks. So if you pick an arbitrary solution of this equation, you'll find that in certain regions, this S2 or S5 shrink. And in general, you'll get a singularity in the geometry. So it will be non-singular only if some special boundary conditions are obeyed. So those special boundary conditions were found in our previous paper, but they were found in for a different variable. So there the equation was written in this form, and this function v is related through this change of variables. And it turns out that when you analyze the, you translate the boundary conditions we had in the previous paper to, well, or you could in principle do it directly here, so you can consider what boundary conditions do you need. And it turns out that B will be a solution of a particular electrostatic problem where we have a bunch of disks in the in this three-dimensional space, and these disks are conducting, so we have conducting disks. So we have the boundary conditions for B that come from saying that it's conducting disk. That is to say, the radial component of the electric field vanishes on this disk. And then here at the origin, we have just a smooth function. So that, and actually the disks themselves are the regions where the correspond to the regions where the S2 shrinks, and the origin corresponds to the region where the S5 shrinks. So So this picture is really telling us what's going on in the 10-dimensional geometry. So at each point on this picture, we have an S2 and an S5. And when we approach the disk, the S2 shrinks. When we approach the origin, the S5 shrinks. Okay. Now, in addition, we have, so we can consider this electrostatic problem. And if we consider this problem in just ordinary electrostatics, what we would find is that the electric field diverges at the tip of the disk. And now here we have an extra constraint that in order for the solution to be smooth, the electric field has to be finite at the tips. So what will ensure that is that we'll have an electric field that grows at infinity. So this is an electrostatic problem where we have an electric field that grows at infinity. We have some background electric field. And this background electric field makes sure that the electric field at the tip is fixed. So this gives us the right number of parameters, because here the parameters will be, well, before I talk about the parameters, let me say one more thing. So we can, when we have one of these disks, we can consider an S6 that surrounds this disk, which is a line in this two-dimensional space, times the S5 that we had in the geometry. And if we measure the flux of the dual of F4, we will find that it's equal to the charge contained in this disk. Okay, so the charge is related to this flux. And well, since fluxes are quantized, these charges are quantized. And then the distance between the disks corresponds to the flux of an H3 over an S3, which is formed by the S2 that we had in the we just mentioned, and this segment. Okay, this is an S. Now, so in some sense, we can say that here we have a bunch of D2 brains, and that in this region we have a bunch of NS5 brains. Of course, this is only qualitative. In the actual geometry, we only have fluxes. We don't have actual brains. But we can think of these fluxes as arising from some brains. And as in our examples here, we can think of the same configuration as arising from a bunch of NS5 brains or a bunch of D2 brains. And these are.
What happened to the 5
and the
S2?
They actually, so at rho equals infinity, they grow and they combine into an S9. So this, what happens at rho equals to infinity depends a little bit on one more thing, which is what is the asymptotic distribution of these disks. So for the case of the matrix model we were discussing, we'll have the additional boundary condition that here at eta equal to 0, we have an infinite conducting disk. Okay. Then we can take the S2 and the S5, so that's so we take the S2 and the S5, that's a 7-dimensional space, and then we add the circle at infinity, that's an 8-dimensional space, and that forms an S8. Okay, and that's the sphere that exists at large distances from the D0 brain. Okay. Now, what exactly we have, so that depending on the fact that we had this conducting disk here, we could consider a situation where we don't have this conducting disk, but we have the full half space. And in that case, so we have a bunch of disks and then the full half space. And that solution will be dual to the 2 plus 1 dimensional Jan-Mells theory. So then at infinity, you have a sphere of a different dimensionality. So it will be a different story. So the asymptotic behavior of the solution tells us what the solution is dual to, where it's dual to any of these three examples that I mentioned. And the topology of these disks is just the topology of the solution. So here we have three disks that determines the topology of the solution. That's different topology than this one that has only two disks. Okay. And then, but we can vary. So what are the parameters we can vary? Well, we can vary the position of where we put each disk. So for each disk, we can vary its position. And also, we can vary its charge. But we cannot vary independently its length, because the length has to be adjusted so that electric field at the tip is zero. So we have only these two parameters. And if you think about it, this agrees with... So when you have such a situation... I need to say one more thing first. Let me give you just a couple of examples. So before I give the examples, I need to know that the value of n, so the number of the zero brains, or the rank of the gauge group, is the dipole moment of this configuration. So it's just this distance times the charge. Okay. So if you fixed n, or you fix your dipole moment, and then you can consider all the different configurations you can have with the constraints that you can put the disk at any position and then assign basically any charge consistent with this dipole moment. And that's basically the same as the formula for given the partitions of n, or the different choices of representations of SUN that we discussed before. So here we can put, since these distances are quantized, we can put a disk at each integer value here, and the charge for that disk is what this ni is. And so that's the same as the formula we had before. OK, so this is another vacuum. This is the vacuum for a single NS5 ring. So at distance 1 from this plane, this conducting plane here at eta equal to 0, we have another conducting disk, which is for large n would be pretty large. And similarly, we can consider a vacuum which corresponds to some number, finite number, let's say, of 5 rings. Will be at some distance m5. And this region here between this region here in between really looks like an NS5 ring. So when you look at how the geometry looks, it really looks like the near horizon geometry of a 5 ring. Okay. Now, it's three-dimensional. It's really it's three-dimensional, but it's actually symmetric, so it's really a problem in two dimensions. But as far as I know, you cannot use... Well, there isn't a simple way to get the solutions. We actually didn't get... So for the case of the BMN matrix model, we didn't get the explicit solutions for any configuration. In other cases, we did get some explicit solutions. So for example, for the case of 2 plus 1 Jan-Mells on a true Corsair, we got one solution explicitly. But we'll see how to get some limits of the solutions that are interesting. But one thing you can prove is that all the solutions with these conditions are smooth. The dilaton is finite everywhere. And the metric in the 0,0 component is also finite. And the minimum value of G0,0 is bigger than 0. So that is consistent with the idea that the theory has a mass cap. So if G00 had gone to 0 at some point, then we wouldn't have a mass cap. What? No, the dilaton varies. Yeah, so but it never becomes infinity. Okay, now I'll just make some minor side comment. So when we have a quantum mechanics theory and we have many vacua, we can have tunneling between the various vacua. And here I've been discussing them as if they were completely different. And well, if we are in the gauge theory, we can consider some subset of vacua So fix the number of disks and then increase the charge on this disk. And this corresponds basically to taking large N for fixed soft coupling. And in this limit, this tunnel in between the different vacua will be suppressed. You can estimate it by computing the height of the barrier between the different vacua. And then in the geometry, the corresponding statement is that if you take this kind of limits, the value of the string coupling will be small everywhere. And it turns out that in order to tunnel from one vacuum to one vacuum to another, you need to create some debranch. So this will be suppressed for weak string coupling. And the reason you need to create some debranch, you can convince yourself of that, because if you a nearby vacuum corresponds to, suppose you have these two disks, you can add a tiny little disk here. And a tiny little disk close to this big disk basically will look like a very small D2 brain, or in other words, like a D0 brain. Okay, so you are creating some D0 brains in the geometry. And so in order to create D0 brains, well, typically that will involve some D brain instanton in the geometry, and so we'll have some tension which is of order 1 over G, and so it will be suppressed in this limit. So the purpose of this transparency is to assure you that there is some limit or some particular limit where the tunneling is suppressed. So you can talk about the different vacua independently and forget about the fact that there are other that there are many vacua. Yeah. Well, that suppresses the that suppresses the mixing and the fact that you don't get energy shifts. But especially if you are going to consider near BPS situations and so on, you have to, well, they could lead to new effects. And also, if I've been separating various solutions, they could not be separated in this way. Okay, so now here we are going to repeat what one normally does in N equal to 4 EMLs, or a limit that has proven to be particularly simple in N equal to 4 EMLs, is to consider a limit in which you consider states that carry large amounts of certain quantum numbers. So the simplest case is when you pick a generator inside SO6 and you consider states that have very large J. And these are the states we just mentioned. So these are BPS states. And then we can consider states that are near BPS, so that whose energy differs from the energy of these states by a small amount. And those states have some special simple properties. In particular, in the geometry, the energies of those states, the near BPS states, is characterized by looking at the geometry near certain lilac geodesics along S5. So here we have an S5 in this geometry, similar to the S5 we have in ADS5. And if we consider some states like this with very large value of J, we can represent these states as lilac geodesics that are moving along S5, and we can focus on the geometry near those geodesics. Now, we need to understand where these geodesics are in this geometry. So the geometry depends non-trivially on two coordinates, so we need to identify where the special BPS geodesics lie in this geometry. And it turns out that they lie at the value that will, well, minimize G00, and if you wish, maximize G55, or in other words, minimize this ratio. And that happens at the tip of this disk. Okay. So if you're interested in these states, you should look at the geometry near the tip of this disk. Okay. So now something nice about the geometry near the tip is that. Okay, let me make one more remark. So here I've just talked about the states with one single single SO6 charge, but one could also consider states with many SO6 quantum numbers. And if we only consider SO6 quantum numbers, what I've said here is the same. So we only need to look at the geometry near this tip. And we can also study near BPS states. So near these tips, we have an electrostatic problem, now really in two dimensions, with in two Euclidean dimensions, and the this disk will look like a half plane in this region. And so we can use the problem, the methods of conformal transformations to find the solution. For the case of one disk, this is you can find it just directly by expanding. But for more complicated cases, you can use the method of conformal transformations. And so you can actually find explicit solutions in many of these situations. So in this simplest case, the solution is just a plane wave, which is similar to the type 2b plane wave, except that the transfer scalars have two different masses, so it's fork with mass 1 and fork with mass 2. And there are some Ramon-Ramon fields that break the SO4 symmetry in this last four coordinates. So we have an SO4 in the first two and an SO3 in the other two. Now, it's interesting to take similar limits in cases that we have, for example, this vacuum where we take N5 fixed and we make you take N to infinity, so the rank of the gauge group to infinity, and then we can take a limit in which we look at distances which are large compared to this separation, but small compared to this to the tip, to the size of the disk. And in this case, what we get is a plane wave similar to this, except that these four dimensions are not just flat space, but they are the near horizon region of some system of five. Right? And I mentioned before that this region here looks like the near horizon region of a five ring, and also this region, also in this region, still looks like the near horizon region of a five ring. Okay, so what are how do these near VPS states look like? Well, as usual, we do Lycon quantization for the string of a plane wave. And in the Lycon-Lagrangian, we have a massive theory. And this massive theory has separates it into two pieces, so the first four transverse dimensions and the second four transverse directions. Now, the first four transverse dimensions are essentially come from the S5. So they are, we pick the direction in S5, so there are four transverse directions inside S5. These are have a simple geometrical meaning, and in some sense, they are Goldstone bosons of SO6, so we chose in one direction, so we broke in the SO6 symmetry, but there are these four Goldstone bosons, and their mass should be one, and they should be free. So this is basically okay. So that's basically guaranteed. So this is true for any of the limits we're considering. The second four directions is another story, that, and we're going to get back to that. Okay, so of course, if we add the scalar fields with zero momentum along the string, we have VPS states. That's the usual story. But then we can add them with some momentum along the string, and then we find that their contribution to the energy, or to the energy difference, to the difference between the energy and this large angular momentum, has this form. So they are basically a massive particle in two dimensions. So that's the usual relativistic dispersion relation to dimensions. And the quantity appearing here is the radius of the S5. And the radius of the S5 is turns out to be related to the value of rho at the tip, so the size of this of the disks we were talking about before. And you can express this size in terms of the gauge theory quantities. For that, you had to work a little bit, but you can, for large rho, you can estimate it without solving the full problem. You can estimate this size with the precise numerical coefficient, and you find this. I didn't write down here the precise numerical coefficient, but it has this form. It goes like gn to the 1/4, to the 1/2, sorry. So you expand this formula and you get this correction. So if you were to do the same exact same thing in n equal to 4 Young Mills, you get here just g squared n. Okay. Now, you can also now go to the gauge theory and do exactly the same computation of computing the dimension minus j.
Sorry, what's
the x? Yeah, x comes now. I haven't gotten to that point. What? But I'm here. Just a sec. Where? But I haven't gotten this part of the transference. X is defined here, but was? Yeah. Well, sorry. Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Sorry. Greg always freaks me inconsistently. Okay, so now for okay, you can do this computation in the YAML in the using perturbation theory in the gauge theory, and it was actually done to in a paper by these people. It was actually done to four loops, so they actually did the honest gauge theory calculation, and they computed this to four loops, and well, they found some expression. And in terms of the Toft coupling, so X is the Toft coupling, and so they found precisely what these coefficients are, and so on. Of course, and well, one of the things they found is that they found that as opposed to n equal to 4 YAMLs, where if you do this at one or two or three loops, you don't find any corrections here. You in this case, you actually do find some corrections. Okay, and it's good that they found some corrections. If they found that this was not corrected, then it would have not been consistent with this formula. Well, of course, the first million corrections could have vanished, but then that's somewhat unlikely. But actually, these corrections are giving us some physical information, which is they are telling us how big this S5 is. So that's sort of the meaning of these corrections. So there is nothing particularly wrong in the fact that there could be some corrections, and we need them to match. Well, we need this. In principle, we'll have to sum this whole series and see whether it matches or not. And well, we don't know. No. No, this is completely different functional dependence. This goes like x to the 1/2, and this goes like x. So you cannot compare the first coefficient with the first coefficient. So this is the precise, so this is the expression for this function. So in general, what you find, what you expect to find from general principles is that if you expand, if you take j very large, and you look, let's say you take n fixed, and you look at the first correction, you expect it to go like n squared over j squared, okay? That's by, let's say, the locality along the string. This is, you expect this under very general principles. And then the coefficient could be an arbitrary function of the Toft coupling. So this is a form for the first correction that you expect on very general principles. Well, what you know is that for weak coupling, it should behave like this, and for strong coupling, it should behave like that. But I don't know of any other bound. I'm not sure. You're asking whether this function contains a singularity for some finite value of x. I don't know. Probably the simplest assumption is that, yeah, it's a simple smooth function. Okay, so that's regarding these first four transverse dimensions. Now we get to the second four transverse directions, and so on the gravity side, if we had this isolated tip, we get the type 2 APP plane wave, and then in these other four transverse directions, we have this mass equal to 2 fields. Okay. Now. Okay. I think, let's see, maybe I skip the transference. Yeah. Okay, if the simplest case to study from the so now I'm going to describe the gravity side, and then we'll go a little bit to the field theory side. Okay, so if we take N5 fixed, and N5 bigger, reasonably large, then we can trust the gravity solution, and we find that the second four directions are described by the third region of an S5 ring, that is WCW model level N5 plus a linear dilaton plus some potential. Okay, so it's sort of like a massive deformation of the theory. So this is a theory that has 4.4 supersymmetry, and actually it's a rather interesting form of 4.4 supersymmetry, because as a 1 plus 1 dimensional field theory, Poincaré invariant theory, we have that the anti-commutator of supersymmetries contains SO4 rotational currents or charges on the right-hand side. So in other words, we have something that look like central charges but are not totally central. They do not commute with the supersymmetry generator. That's also a feature of the supersymmetry algebra in the type 2B plane wave on the string. Okay, so this description using gravity, it's good for N5 very large, and it looks fairly okay for N5 bigger or equal than 2, because this theory exists for N5 bigger or equal than 2. However, if N5 is equal to 1, then we don't have really a throat region. So we don't we don't have a WCW model level supersymmetric, which is level 1. So it is natural to conjecture that we don't have these dimensions. We only have the first four transverse dimensions we discussed before, but we don't have any degrees of freedom in these other four transverse dimensions for the case of N5 equal to 1. So do we see any difference in the gauge theory between N5 equal to 1 and N5 bigger than 1? Well, let's first analyze the N5 equal to 1 in a naive way. So this naive way will be wrong, but... Yeah, this is gravity and Wolfschild theory. So first, what we did here... Okay, let me be a little more clear on what we are doing here. So what one does is the following. So one starts from this picture, and one expands the solution around this region, right? So considering the distance is bigger than this, okay? And you solve this problem. So this is an electrostatic problem now in one plus one dimension. We have an infinite plane and then a half plane. And then you solve that using conformal transformations. You get some solution. You put it in the general form for the solution that I described before. And then, where was the transparency I was discussing? You put it there, and then you find this description that we discussed here, when you consider a string propagating in that geometry, right? You take that geometry, you put the string, you put in a Lycon gauge, and then in Lycon gauge you have 8 transverse dimensions. The first 4 I already discussed, and then the second 4 are described by this theory. So this is a description of the Wolfschild theory. And here there is the conjecture that for n equal to 1, we don't have any degrees of freedom on the Wolfschild for these 4 transverse dimensions. Now, central charge would not be okay, so if we drop these degrees of freedom. But we're in Lycon gauge, so I'm not sure if we really need the central charge to be okay. I don't know the covariant description of this story. Of course, a string in six dimensions would not be. It's not Lorentz invariant, but we don't really have a Lorentz invariant problem here because we only have the S5, and there is a large amount of fluxes on the brain. So what could happen is that you do have a conformal field theory, but that when you try to get into the near horizon region, the mass terms that you get are very large. So effectively, the mass terms become infinite when you take this limit. And so there is no contradiction with the covariant description. So that's one way in which it could work. But I don't have a more precise description than this. If you think about this 5-brain, it's a 5-brain that has a lot of the zero brain charge, right? So it's not Lorentz invariant Lorentz invariant on its work volume. So it's not an obvious contradiction. Anyway, so let's go back to the matrix model. And now we're going to consider the case of N5 equal to 1, which from that matrix model is the one that looks simplest. And let's first do some naive counting of the degrees of freedom that we have, and then we'll do a more correct counting. So the naive counting consists in saying, well, we have these operators, trace C to the J, and then when we consider near BPS states, we just add some impurities, which are some other operators, so we consider a bunch of C's and a few of these other operators. So there are a bunch of operators with delta minus J equal to 1, which are the other scalars in SO6, so those correspond to the first four transverse dimensions we discussed. And then there are a bunch of other scalars with delta minus J equal to 2, which are the three SO3 scalars and then C bar. And so naively, one thinks, well, I add these other scalars and they can propagate along the string. And so it looks very similar to the spectrum we had in the type 2A plane wave. So now this is not correct. So the correct thing is to, what happens is the following. So let's go to weak coupling. And so here we are only analyzing what happens at weak coupling. And this analysis is very similar. Actually, it is the same. So it was shown as the same as the analysis that was done for n equal to 4 Young MELS. So diagonalizing the one-loop Hamiltonian of n equal to 4 Young MELS. So the one-loop Hamiltonian for the matrix model for n5 equal to 1 is a truncation of the one for full n equal to 4 super Young MELS. And what was found is essentially that these delta minus j equal to 2 impurities are not extra degrees of freedom. They should, in some sense, be viewed as, if you wish, part of the... They should be viewed as two n equal delta minus j equal to 1 impurities on top of each other. Now, let me be a little more precise. I mean, what Weisser actually showed was that these kinds of operators, which seem to contain one impurity of mass 2, actually mix with these operators where, well, actually, I didn't put this correctly. So C, L, C, J minus L, etc., and summed over L. So it mixes with these kind of operators. And in fact, all the energies actually get shifted, and you don't have a new mass 2 state. Okay? No, I'm just saying that you should not consider this as a new degree of freedom that propagates on the string. They should be viewed, so these things are like two delta equal to one impurities on top of each other. In other words, when you look at the spectrum of the one-loop Hamiltonian, you find that you can describe it in terms of some quasi-particles. There will be some quasi-particles propagating on the string, and these quasi-particles are correspond basically to the delta minus j equal to 1 impurities. You don't have additional ones. You don't have additional quasi-particles with delta minus j equal to 2. In other words, in condensed matter terms, you don't have two bands. You have only one band. Okay.
Well, we're talking about an equal
4. We are talking about the BMM matrix model. But the discussion could also apply to n equal to 4. Actually, it was done by Niklas originally for n equal to 4. But the analysis is basically the same. Okay. And in fact, using if the theory we discussed on the world sheet just a moment ago had 4.4 supersymmetry, and if we had an excitation with mass exactly 2 and with the spin we expect it to have, it would be a BPS excitation along the string. And indeed, one can using these index arguments I mentioned before, that in this particular case, there is no BPS, there's no extra BPS state that would correspond to these kinds of, that would lead to an extra mass 2 on the string, extra particle of mass 2 on the string. So, in other words, so the end, really the conclusion I would like to draw from here is that this is consistent with the idea that these four extra dimensions are not there. Okay? So that's the final conclusion of this. And now, what is the change when we have we consider n5 equal to 2. So when we consider 2 5 range. Well, there are some changes. So now what we do is when we take the matrix model, we really expand in Kaluza-Klein harmonics on the fuzzy sphere. So the zero of Kaluza-Klein harmonic are the fix we already had before for n5 equal to 1. And then on the the simplest fuzzy sphere, there is one extra Kaluza-Klein harmonic. So they correspond to certain representations of the group, and so there are just really two modes. And this extra mode that we have is really one other impurity that can propagate on the string, and does have also some states with energy minus j equal to 2. And in this case, there is an extra BPS state, so there is some representation which has some Young diagram like this, which is actually protected. You can show from these index arguments that it is protected. There is nothing that could combine with it. So it really leads to an extra mass 2 particle along the string. So it leads to the extra BPS state we expect and everything. OK, so now Niklas showed that for the n 5 equal to 1 case, the BMN one loop Hamiltonian is a truncation of the n equal to 4 Hamiltonian. In this case, it's not a truncation. So, but well, this is just a side remark. No, because this property is just a property of the one loop Hamiltonian. Well, I'm not sure why you wouldn't expect it, but it could be. So that it doesn't contradict anything. For the n5 equal to 1 case, it is. For the n5 equal to 2 case, it could have been. I don't see an a priori reason for why. We're talking just about the one loop. Of course, if you consider the all loops, yeah, you expect it to be different. It certainly could not be because of the different behavior, for example, of the correction to the energies we discussed before. So that implies it cannot be. This is not true for higher loops.
So for time period, by time period, we can move to the special state.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So when we truncate, so this the statement that I made in the beginning of the talk, that these are truncations from n equal to 4 Young Mills. Yeah, they're the truncation at the level of the Lagrangian. So you take the Lagrangian, you throw out some fields, and then you consider the quantum theory constructed from the new Lagrangian. This truncation doesn't work at the level of quantum theory, that you take the full quantum theory and you throw out certain states. That is not the correct procedure. The correct procedure is that we use this truncation method to construct the new Lagrangian. But then you need to solve each theory independently.
I tell you, perhaps, say for the
No, I don't think I can. Because the guy decided is already taking into account the quantum mechanics of this theory. So. Yeah. So we had to do a little more work. It's not just, you cannot get it very simply from taking ADS 5 cross S 5 and doing some dualities. Yeah. You really have to consider, do a little more work to get the solutions.
This is still a consistent location of n equals 4?
Yeah, because they are consistent because you are truncating based on some symmetries. So the symmetry itself prevents the extra coupling.
I was just wondering why, if you just take the next level, and why doesn't it maybe create higher levels in the equation? But this n equals 2 particle.
I see what you're asking. Yeah, no, sorry. The n5 equal to 2 is not a truncation. What this truncation is the full BMN matrix model. What?
Is that in n equals 4 terms? Is that actually also a single excitation?
Yeah, so in n equal to 4 terms, this.
In n equals 4, you had twice the number of single excitations.
Well, in order to answer this question, I would need to explain some things a little more. So here we're doing something different than just considering the, if you just take n equal to 4 in the BMN matrix model, that's what I described in the beginning. And so we truncate, and I described explicitly which modes we have. We have the zero Kaluza-Klein motor on the S5, for example. Right. Now, these multiplets here are excitations around a specific vacuum. So you take that n equal to 4, and then you expand around some vacuum. Okay. So they are not exactly the same as the fields in the original theory. So here, this is a Kaluza-Klein mode on this fuzzy sphere. So this has the same quantum numbers as, if you wish, a first Kaluza-Klein mode on the whole S3 for n equal to 4 Young Mells. But this doesn't mean that it was that we kept this field in a BMA matrix model. It only has the same transformation properties, right? So around this vacuum, it behaves in this way. But okay. Yeah, so this behaves. So if you take, for example, the oscillator construction of the fields in n equal to 4, it corresponds to saying that the U1 charge, so that there is this oscillator construction, for example, that Gunaydin made, and then you use in your paper. And then there are some oscillators, let's say A dagger, B dagger, and then CI, where these create basically SO6 excitations, and these create excitations in ADS. The transform under one SU2 and the other SU2. So it corresponds to taking here terms that have two of these bits and have, let's say, only one insertion of this or two insertions of this. That gives this spectrum. And if we had N5 finite, then we'd have more. But this is a good description for describing the excitations or talking about the group theory of the excitations around this particular vacuum, which is different than talking about the fields we had in the original matrix model. Okay. So this remark I made here, what it's really addressing is that if you consider, for example, the one loop, well, maybe. Well, maybe I won't say that. But if you consider, so you wrote the one loop dilation Hamiltonian in terms of these operators, in terms of this, you label the states in this way. So you can ask, well, if I label the states also in the same way, is it truncation or not? And it's not. So, but there isn't any reason it should be. So. Okay, so this plane wave matrix model is closely connected to n equal to 4 Young Mells. That's why. Well, it's interesting to study. It appears in string theory in many ways. And it's also interesting to study the similarities and differences between this matrix model and n equal to 4 Young Mells. So, for example, this renormalization of the coupling is some interesting story that happens in this case. And it would be interesting to understand why it doesn't happen in n equal to 4 Young Mells. And a similar plane wave limit. Similar to the one we take in n equal to 4, gives us a rather more complicated theory in this case. So it doesn't give us a simple plane wave theory, but it gives us a more complicated theory. And by doing the analysis a little more carefully, we understand at least some features of this extra theory. And it might be possible to go much further. It might be possible to show that in this limit, it might be that this theory we get in this extra four dimensions is integrable, and that you can match the two sides. I don't know. But I think it's some interesting system to study. And thank you very much.
I hope somebody writes some blog about this talk. Are there any questions?
It's a little vague.
Yeah.
So, in the duality between the n equal 4 and the in the gravity description, mm-hmm. you have this nice description of the half BPS states.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now, when we go to the M theory side of the story, you have the gravity description already in the other picture. So is now the idea that the BMM matrix model is the blue big theory that one should be studying in this case? And does it have some free fermion description of the half BPS?
Right. So the free fermion story was most useful, and well, we really had something very close that matched very closely the free fermion description in the type 2b case. This corresponds to the M3 case of the 1/2 VPS story. And so there we didn't have a description in terms of free fermions, though it looked rather similar, but we didn't have a phase space that had density 1 and 0. Now, the BM matrix mold is not a description of those half BPS states, because it's really different. We have different boundary conditions. So in terms of, for example, the droplets we would have had in the M, so for example, in general, in M theory half BPS states, again, we have some plane X1 and X2, and we have some droplets of things, regions we can call M2 brain and M5 brain regions. But in order to go to the BMM matrix mode, what you really need to do is you really need to compactify X1. So this is in a space where this is compact and so on. So it's really different boundary conditions. So we're not saying that this is equivalent to saying that the BMM matrix mode is the same as the free fermion description for this. Though they are closely connected.
Is there any evidence of free fermions in this system?
Yes. But I don't understand the connection. So the equation that describes this is a Toda equation, and this Toda equation has some relationship to free fermions, but I don't see that they are the same free fermions that would have density 0 here and 1 here, for example. So I don't see a connection between the geometry of those fermions that describe the Toda equation and this thing. But there might be, maybe there is.
In some sense, a simplification of
X-Fox polynomials.
Right. Is there a sense in which the corresponding
dual
graph is simplification
for the spike? No, it's a complication. So, yeah, from the gravity point of view, it's more complicated. It has less symmetries, and then it's more complicated. It has all this vacuum. And it has less symmetries. And so from that point of view, it's a complication from the fact that it has less symmetries.
Yeah. Is it correct to say that the background which corresponds to the BMM matrix model is obtained by imposing some constraint on the background which corresponds to the original N4?
No. Yeah, it's not, because this truncation is something we do at the level of the sort of free Lagrangian, at the level of the fields in the Lagrangian.
But the symmetry that you use to impose truncation can be used to impose truncation on the full Hilbert space of the series.
You can use it, but you won't get the right answer. So you can take the full Hilbert space of n equal to 4 and select only the states that are invariant on the residue to left. But this, you'll get some states and with some energies, but this will not match the energies and states that you will get from doing first the truncation and then the quantization. Well, maybe I'd say it in a different way. So if you just think about it, you'll become convinced. So in the original states, right, inside the loops, you had the states that were also not invariant that were propagating. So when you do the quantum theory. On the other hand, in the truncated quantum mechanical theory, the only states you have in loops are states that are invariant.
Does it have to restrict somehow to observables which are singlets on the pieces?
Yeah, no. I suppose you do restriction to the observables that are singlets. In the loops, you have non-singlets. If you do this truncation the way you said in the n equal to 4, and so that's why it gives you a different answer.
Why do you say one is correct and the other one is? I mean, it seems to me that first doing the quantization and then the truncation would be the correct prescription.
This gives you some theory. This gives you n equal to 4 restricted to some subsector, and you can certainly consider that. And it's this procedure is correct, but it's completely unrelated to the BMM matrix model. It's correct and has been done. I mean, people have been studying these subsets of n equal to 4, like the C2 subsector and so on. So they've studied these questions, but it is a different thing.
Mm-hmm.